You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When people talk about fundamentalist Mormons, they usually focus on the impact that polygamy has on the women. But many of the boys in the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints also face hardships, especially when they're expelled and forced to cope with an outside world they barely understand. Brent W. Jeffs tells his story with the help of Maya Shlalovitz in a memoir from Broadway Books called Lost Boy, and I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
There have been several memoirs published by former women who've left the FLDS, but why haven't we heard more from the males who leave or are forced out of the community?
You know, I honestly think they're embarrassed or maybe even afraid to come out and let the world hear their voice. I made a personal decision years back to let the world hear my voice and voice how I felt and voice what happened to me.
Well, in your situation, I don't want to get to it right away.
Sure.
But it's a rather dramatic situation. Do you think that you were atypical, or is this something that's happened to a lot of people?
I think it has happened to a lot of people. Once again, they hide it and they block it away for so long, and they don't ever want to revisit it again.
Well, getting back to being thrown out of the community, why are the boys kicked out? How old are they generally?
They're in their teenage years, and what has happened is all these older men are noticing there's the same amount of boys as there are girls. So all of a sudden these older men aren't going to get all these new wives if these new upcoming boys, you know, are becoming men and needing families. So
they pick and choose. They say, you're one of the good guys. You'll be like us. You can stay, and we've got to get rid of this kid who's too rebellious?
Yeah, I mean, they pick on any of the boys that have anything, any sort of a free-thinking mind, or they look for any little teeny thing to fault them and immediately just go to kicking them out, and these boys have nowhere to go.
What happens to them?
They bring them out to the edge of town and say, you know, you've been kicked out of this church, you're no longer a member, and they turn their backs on them.
And then the kids have to cope for themselves. They're, yeah, what, 14, the kids, 15 years old?
Yeah, they have to fend for themselves, and thank God they have, you know, other kids that previously are a little bit older that have been kicked out to turn to for help. And so that's, you know, that's why we started up the Smiles for Diversity organization, to help these kids, to help them find their way.
Well, what happened in the old days when Joseph Smith and Brigham Young were the leaders of the original church? There were as many boys born as girls. How did they take care of the problem then?
You know, I don't accurately know how they did that back then, but I'm sure, I don't think it was that way. From what I know back then, there was a lot of men that got put away in jail, and the polygamy started when all these women needed to have a man basically in their lives. So for me, that's what I understood how that started.
Now, the name Jeffs will be familiar to people who read newspapers. You're the grandson of Rulon Jeffs, who became the prophet and leader of the FLDS in 1986. Did that automatically mean that you and your family would be high-ranking members of the church?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just growing up my whole life, you know, the way I was treated in school and everything, I was always looked at, you know, as the royal blood, you know. You're the grandson of the prophet, you know. You have special privileges.
And talk about an extended family because of this. You have 65 aunts and uncles on your dad's side, 22 on your mom's, thousands of cousins. And where was Warren Jeffs, who became the prophet later, the man who wound up in jail? Where was he in this mix?
He was one of the younger brothers born in, you know, my dad's siblings, but his mother was just a favorite of my grandfather's, and, you know, that's kind of how Warren got his foot in the door. She kind of just put him and pushed him in front of Rulon and kind of made him the favorite.
Did your family status make it harder for you to question authority because you were benefiting from it?
Yeah, I mean, it was really hard because, you know, the authority part of that, you know, it was hard to see any part of that come through.
Well, who exercises this authority? Is it simply the prophet? Does he have control over everything that's done? Yeah,
absolutely. Rulon, when he took over, he started changing the rules, and he called it a one-man rule. So everything that the church decided was because is what he decided.
So he really changed the way the church had functioned. Yeah. Had been more democratic before.
Yeah, the previous prophet, let the families be families. Let them, you know, let them be kind of a normal family inside the church.
At one point, didn't Warren Jeffs refuse to tell people they couldn't smile or laugh?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, right before he was, you know, caught and stuff, he was just out of control, and that was one more way for him to control these people.
You say that once you get over the sexual advantages for the men, polygamy is a recipe for misery for all involved. Why are there so many conflicts over how the children of the wives are raised?
Well, if you think about it, you got each mom with her children, she's going to defend her children. And when another mother comes in to, you know, maybe reprimand a kid, the child's mom, real mom, is going to stand up and say, I don't think so. That does not work.
So they can work out the sexual arrangement, but they can't work out the children arrangement.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I saw growing up.
Because people mostly assume it's going to be women fighting over who is the favorite.
Well, probably behind closed doors as me. You know, my parents, I never saw that sexual part, but I can totally bet on that behind closed doors, absolutely, the sexual part was absolutely horrible for each of the moms to know that he's, you know, he's having sexual relations with, you know, the other sister wives and having to share that love.
Well, how did they relate to you?
As far as what?
Well, you said that they all fight over who can say what. If one of the sister wives said to you, you know, Brent, you left your socks on the living room floor, pick them up, would you say, you're not my mother?
Generally, no, because we were taught that we have to just obey, you know, all the mothers. They're all the same. So it was hard.
Well, you had to obey everybody. You say that you were molested when you were five.
Yeah.
And this was also a matter of obeying, wasn't it?
Absolutely. From when we were able to even figure out learning and talking and walk, everything, that's when all that started, the brainwashing, the constant, you know, obey this, you have to do exactly what we say. So that became a part of me.
How common is molestation in the FLDS? Do you know?
It's very common. The thing is each family, it's happening in so many of these families, but they're too embarrassed to talk about it, so nobody else inside the church will know of each family's individual problems. But it's very, very common.
Well, in your case, it was Warren Jeffs himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not sure whether he wasn't just a bad apple, although he did become the prophet. You're saying there are any number of other men who do the same sort of thing?
Absolutely.
Don't just have wives, but they also want to molest little boys?
Yeah, little boys and little girls. It was very common, but a very hush-hush thing because, you know, obviously the men didn't want to be, you know, found out because that would just publicly humiliate them in front of everyone else in the church.
Do you know when your uncle started sexually assaulting and abusing kids?
From my knowledge on that, he started when he was a teenager, and it was to an actual kid in the neighborhood that we grew up in that wasn't even in the church. And that was completely brushed under the rug. No one really found out about it.
My guest is Brent W. Jeffs. His book, Lost Boy, is published by Broadway Books. Sex in the FLDS community is for reproduction, at least that's what it said.
Yes.
Not pleasure. So how does that explain this molestation? And how would some – did you ever talk about it with Warren?
Oh, absolutely not. I believe that he was a victim also of molestation. I'm not sure who, but it started somewhere with him. You can't just wake up one day and want to do something like that. But with him, it started out small, and it grew into something that was absolutely out of control.
And you saw other people, somebody really close to you, who also had been molested and then went on to molest.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Well, do people know what was going on?
I think... Yeah, some of them knew inside the church, very close to Warren knew, but did not say anything out of fear of, you know, them getting in trouble or, you know, they're losing their families and stuff like that.
Did you ever tell anyone what he was doing to you?
Absolutely not.
How did he get you to keep quiet about it?
He put the fear of God in me. This is God's will. This is God's work. If you go against God's will, guess what? You're going to burn in hell. So I trapped that inside and held that inside my whole life.
Well, he wasn't the prophet at the time.
He had power. He was close to the prophet, and he was the principal of the school.
You were able to compartmentalize your feelings, which is not a unique response to this sort of thing. In fact, many people do. Yeah. What did you do?
Well, basically, I would kind of mentally, I would check out. When a traumatic event like that happened to me the first time from then on, I would just subconsciously check out of the situation, let whatever happened happen, and then once it was over, I would just kind of go back into reality.
Did the abuse mark you for expulsion after Warren took over control of the church? I would think that he might see that as a way of protecting himself.
No, and he never even confronted me about it at all. It's when I was out and left the church, years after is when I came out and finally voiced my, let everybody hear my voice on that.
And that's after you discovered that your brothers had also been molested by Warren Jeffs?
My oldest brother, Clayne, told me very first what had happened to him, and when he had told me, I was just absolutely devastated because I thought I was the only one in the family.
Well, had you repressed it, or was it still something that you had to deal with on a regular basis?
I think I repressed it so deep that it was there, but I was not consciously aware of it until he had told me, and then it just totally hit me.
And how did they cope, your brothers?
Well, with Clayne, he dealt with years and years of drug abuse, and we could never figure out what's wrong with him. Why does he keep turning back to these drugs? And when he took his own life, and we found all that stuff out, it was absolutely just heart-wrenching to know that it got that far.
Did any of you talk about this with your parents?
No, not growing up, but after, yeah. When I decided to come out about it, that's when I told my parents.
Well, your parents had already left the church as well, hadn't they?
Yeah, and they were.
So that was. Do you think you could have told them if you were still in the church? And after all, Warren Jeffs was your uncle.
Absolutely not, because that was. I can't say whether or not they would have. They probably would have believed me, but there would have been nothing they could have done if they were still members of the church. It would have just been brushed under the rug like everything else does.
My guest is Brent W. Jeffs, who's the nephew of Warren Jeffs, grandson of Rulon Jeffs, the Mormon fundamentalist group's former prophet, who had dozens of wives and more than 60 children. And he has written a book, Brent has, called Lost Boy. It is published by Broadway Books, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Brent W. Jeffs, who has written with the help of Maya Jalovitz a book called Lost Boy. It is published by Broadway Books, and it talks about life inside the fundamentalist Mormons, the church that was raided last year, right?
Yeah, down in the state of Texas it was raided, yeah.
And all the talk then was about young girls being married off. Nobody said anything about boys.
Yeah, and... that's another reason why, I wrote this book. I wanted everybody to hear, the boy side of the story, I'm definitely not discrediting the girls or anything, but, I felt like that my voice and all the other boys' voice should be heard also.
Why do you think that the authorities lost the media battle over that raid last year?
That's a hard one there because... I guess the proof. It's actual proof. I guess that happened when that girl called in.
Well, nobody ever found that girl.
Or something happened there where it wasn't the actual girl or something that called in that was from the ranch. And so they had no leg to stand on there. And so I think that's probably one of the biggest factors on how they got the kids back.
Although there still was marrying up people who were 12, 13 years old.
Yes, that's definitely going on.
Wasn't there an earlier raid, 1953, at Short Creek?
Yeah.
Was that similar?
I'm not exactly sure on how that one went down or what the, what the details are on that. All I know is a lot of the men got put in jail. I think it was, back then it was for just living the law of polygamy. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a little bit different from this.
Well, what happened here? Did the law just look the other way? After all, it still is against the law to be a bigamist.
Yes. technically, they're not breaking the law because one man legally marries one wife. All the other wives are spiritually married. So by law, they're not married to this one man. So they found loopholes. And the law's the law. And so, you know, they have to abide by the law regardless.
And at Short Creek, I understand, they did run into similar problems. Taking away someone's kids for a long time just doesn't go down very well with the public.
No, and, you know, that's another problem, too, is in the law's eyes, you're taking away these kids that are at such a young age. It's illegal to take these kids away from their parents. They're not even 18 years old.
Can we talk a bit about the closed society that you were living in?
Sure.
This is not a unique situation. There are any number of groups that live in with a fortress mentality. But what was it like? You say that the fear of the outside world is instilled in you as a result of living this closed-off life, and that's a way to keep people really committed to the church?
Yeah, I mean, they taught us from a very young age through fear, you know, all these people on the outside walls, they're horrible, mean, evil people, and we are the chosen people. So if you leave and you turn your back on this church, you are condemned to hell.
But any number of the members had experiences with the outside world. They must have recognized that the people they met were some were good and
yes.
some were not so good. Your father served in Vietnam, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did serve in Vietnam. And, you know, a lot of these men, you know, that knew the outside world, I think they felt like they had such a connection inside the church. The church had been part of their lives, their entire lives. They did not dare do anything different. But
so when your father came back from Vietnam, he just fell right back into the life?
Yeah, I mean, that was his whole life, his whole family. Everything he did and represented was for his family. So even going through Vietnam, he did see the real, real world. But after he was done, it was right back home and on to marriage.
Well, how did you wind up going to kindergarten at a local public school instead of to the FLDS school?
At that point in my life, for some reason, my parents put me and my sister into kindergarten. It was just me and her, and then the other kids didn't go. I'm not exactly sure why I went, but it was good to see the outside world, you know.
And do you think that those experiences outside the community made it easier for you and your family to eventually leave the FLDS?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Even for me, being in kindergarten, I saw what the outside world was like. People are warm and friendly, and they're not these horrible people like they're saying. That was a huge factor when my dad decided to leave and take his family. That's something that did not happen.
You described the heavy repetition throughout the FLDS services as a form of brainwashing.
Absolutely. Not only on Sunday did you hear this preaching, every day in school, they had an hour class in the morning with the entire school going over these same teachings over and over and over. Pretty soon, it just becomes an absolute part of your life. Hmm. That's all you.
These closed societies, I mean, I'm thinking about others. Yesterday, there was an Irish report on a 9-year investigation into abuse at a Catholic-run reformatories, and it was found to be widespread, but advocates for the victims were frustrated that no names were named.
Yeah, once again, it's such a close society. No one dares to stand up and say anything because it's all run by fear.
Was it unusual that your father served in the Vietnam War?
Yeah, I mean,
how did that happen? Did they come and draft him? Yeah. I mean, what happens when other people were drafted?
My dad was the only one drafted, and he never really understood how that went down because he had all these brothers. He's the only one that got drafted into the Vietnam War. He had no choice. And so, you know, I'm thankful that he did in a way that he actually got to see the outside world and he got to defend our country.
On the other hand, he also suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder.
He did severely.
He came as a result of his experiences in Vietnam?
Absolutely. You know, growing up, that was definitely something that he suffered from. And now that I look back, I definitely saw the stress, you know, of him trying to run a household of three wives and all these 20 children and also having that PTSD weigh over him all the time, every single day, you know, now I have a huge, deep level of respect and love for him, of what he went through.
How did he get the money to support all these people?
Well, he had a pretty good job growing up, and also my mom and the other moms would just go out and do odd jobs, you know, in the neighborhood, like ironing people's clothes and house cleaning and stuff like that. So any little bit that the moms made poured into the pot, and then the older kids would go out and work and pour into the pot too.
Were you living in trailers the way we see this sort of thing described on television?
No, we lived up in Sandy, Utah, and my dad had built a home up there, you know, from the beginning of the kids. And so, yeah, we grew up in a really nice home set on a really nice piece of property, so we were very fortunate.
But your family went into group therapy. Is that typical in the church?
No, the group therapy for my family was something, you know, through the VA, and just to help us understand kind of what Dad went through and to help us all just kind of understand each other a lot better.
And what led eventually to your father's decision to leave the church?
What happened is my oldest brother, Klain, he lost a six-month-old baby. She died of SIDS. We held a little funeral service.
This is Klain, who you said had a serious drug problem throughout
his
life.
Yeah, and he's the one who committed suicide. We had the little funeral at our house, and Warren and his little followers were watching us because Klain was no longer a member of the church then, okay? So he was watching us, and so he saw all that Klain and stuff over at our house. He immediately went and told my grandfather. So the next day my grandfather, you know, called in my dad and says, because you're harboring Gentiles in your home, you no longer hold the priesthood. And he was going to take away you know, my mom and all the kids and stuff. And so my dad just stood up and said, absolutely not. I am going to take my family and my kids, and I will leave. And he left.
So when people were thrown out, you said males are thrown out regularly, they couldn't come back home because they would be considered Gentiles? They had to lose total, the family had to cut off from them totally?
Yeah, and some of the men, it was kind of weird, they would kind of be thrown out and put on probation. But on the flip side, they still lost their wife and kids to another man.
So at this point, we have a situation where your grandfather, Rulon, is still running the church, but in effect, Warren is the de facto leader.
Yeah, and as grandfather got older, my grandfather got older, Warren was planting these little thoughts and seeds in Rulon's head because Rulon was the prophet. He knew that Rulon had the power.
But your family didn't leave the compound.
After we left?
Well, didn't you stay on the compound for a while?
We did, you know, just for a little bit. My dad ended up selling the house to his brother. We didn't want to be a part of that. We kind of felt like we're done with that, you know, we don't want to live on that property. So he did sell it and move on.
And by that time, all of your older brothers had left, but you stayed.
Yeah.
Why did you stay?
When my family got kicked out, I had the huge overwhelming sense of fear come over me that because I turned my back on my church, I'm going to burn in hell. So I felt the need to go down and live in Colorado City for, you know, around 9 months. But once, you know, right around the 9 months coming up on that, I the way I was treated by everyone in that town, especially Warren, because of who I was and who my family was, that there was nothing left for me there.
They were angry with you because your father had left and because all your brothers were gone.
Absolutely. So, you know, he basically asked me to leave, and I was leaving anyway, and it was just, I'm done.
My guest is Brent W. Jeffs. His book, Lost Boy, is published by Broadway Books. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Your brother committed suicide. You must have, and you knew that he had been molested by Warren. You discovered your other brothers had been molested by Warren. Is that when you decided to seek psychological help?
Yes, absolutely. I knew if I did not want to have a life like my brother. I did not want to turn to drugs for therapy. You know, that was not a part of me that I wanted to do. So, yes, therapy helped a lot.
And what other alternatives did you see? Was it easy for you to go out and get a job?
Well, it was because I was in construction. So, yeah, construction, you know, it wasn't, you know, a highly social job. I just go to work, do my job, and go home. But, yes, it was hard to, you know, kind of go out in the real world and try and adjust.
You said that there's a lot of that this is a culture that's very secretive. Do you have any sense that your family story, with all of its tragedies, is unique within the FLDS community?
I think it's unique in its own way of just of the circumstances that happened along the way. But I think also there's a lot of similar experiences that go on in that FLDS community even right now to this day.
Well, you decided to file the first sexual abuse lawsuit against Warren Jeffs. And did you know that there were other boys at the time who were planning to file a lawsuit?
No. Right at that point in my life when I decided to file that, that was something that I decided on my own that I'm going to do, and I'm not going to let this guy walk all over me anymore. I'm done. Soon after, that's when they decided to come out and say something also.
But they weren't suing for sexual abuse?
Absolutely not, just me.
And what was the grounds for their suit?
Theirs was more or less being kicked out, you know, left on their own by their parents and by Warren at a young age when they're not even legally meant to, you know, they're not even legally able to leave, you know, their families.
And what did the state decide? This is Utah.
Yeah. Basically what happened is we ended up just settling on one piece of property. And because all these other lawsuits started coming up, like, you know, Alyssa Wall's lawsuit and stuff like that, my main goal in all of this was to stop Warren from what he was doing. So the second that he was caught and, you know, when he was sentenced and put away in jail, I dropped my personal lawsuit with him because I felt like my job was done in that aspect.
Is he still in jail?
Yeah.
Do you think it would have been different if you were in one of the fundamentalist communities in Colorado or where else are they? California, Mexico?
They're all over. There's some in Canada, yeah, Mexico, Colorado, South Dakota. Those are new and upcoming places. I mean, those were all new.
But they didn't have Warren Jeffs. They had their own version of Warren Jeffs.
Yeah, well, he's the one that started all of them, but he kind of, I don't know, I don't understand the reasoning why he was planting all these little areas of polygamy. I don't really understand why he was doing that.
You mean coming up with all these satellite communities?
Yeah.
Don't you think if there are a lot all over, then it actually helps? It if there's only one, then that one is a lot more vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that does make a lot more sense. I went up to that one in Colorado, and, you know, it's once again, it's the same closed-off society, fenced off and everything. So yeah, it definitely, I could understand where he would have a safe point in each one to go to.
He has, if I remember reading the newspapers, he's had a nervous breakdown. At one point, he even said that he really wasn't the prophet.
Yeah, you know,
who's running it now?
I have no idea. I think it's a number of different men that are running it. For him, maybe it had to have been the overwhelming guilt of what he had done to all of these people. And finally, sitting in that jail cell and his mind just, you know, going crazy with all these things that he's done, it finally hit him.
You're married and you're a father.
I have a beautiful little 2-year-old daughter, yes.
Has it been rough because you're trying to live in a totally different culture from the one you grew up in?
It's actually okay. I'm actually currently separated, but my marriage, yeah, it's been rocky. It's been like, you know.
Well, you've been through an awful lot.
Yeah, and.
And I suspect a woman married to you has to be something of a saint. And forgive me for thinking that way, but.
No, you're right. I mean, I was numb for a lot of my years in my marriage. And so I think that had a huge effect on that. And me pursuing all this, the lawsuit and everything else, you know, we just kind of grew apart and, you know. Things happened, and here we are.
Well, do you think that writing this book is making you less numb?
Oh, yes. I am way more in tune with my feelings. I'm starting to feel emotions. I feel great. This was absolute therapy for me to write this book, to put all this pain and all this fear and all this anguish into the book and not let it own me.
And you wrote it with the help of Maya Shalovitz. She's in New York. You're in Salt Lake City. How did you do that?
Basically, with me and her, we talked on the phone and did a lot of interviews on the phone. And she flew out to Salt Lake quite a few times, and we got a lot of writing done there. But she has been absolutely amazing to work with.
Well, she's an advocate for teenagers. And,
yes.
And this is really a story about an awful situation for teenagers.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Brent W. Jeffs, his book, Lost Boy, is published by Broadway Books.